Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Lauren Kate, who is out with a new novel, The Orphan's Song. It is available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Putnam. Lauren, you have diverted yourself from writing fiction for young adults into writing fiction for, well, adult adults, and with The Orphan's Song, set in Venice in the 18th century around an orphanage. Take me back to the first time you traveled to Venice, and it seems like you really fell in love with that city.
Wow, the first time I went to Venice was the first time I ever left the country. I think I was 12 years old, and the English teacher who was teaching the kind of gifted program at my school, who ended up being the person who inspired me to become a writer and the first person who encouraged me to become a writer, she took a group of us to Italy, and one of the things I remember about that trip was being let loose for the first time alone in a city. I think it was the first time I had ever been encouraged to get lost in a place. Venice is the kind of city where you can't help but getting lost. And so on subsequent visits, even though I love to tackle a map and kind of really understand the layout of a city, Venice is a city I never do that in. I go there with a plan to let the city take a hold of me and surprise me. And I think in some ways that really reflects what it feels like to write a novel, because you can start with a plan, you can start with a map in your head, but the best part of writing at least the first draft of a novel is when your characters tell you turn left instead of turn right, and you end up somewhere with them that you'd never anticipated.
This novel is by and large set in something called the Hospital of the Incurables in Venice in the early 18th century. And I think it's a concept that's kind of foreign to those of us in the Midwest, this whole idea of an orphanage in the first place, let alone one that had all of the benefits, but both the religious education and the musical education that was going on there. So can you explain the Hospital for the Incurables, where the novel's set?
Sure. I think it's a very unusual concept. I mean, there were four of these orphanages in Venice, and they each decided to serve this civic function of teaching the young girls there to sing and play instruments for the church. And this was a process that lasted about 500 years until the Republic fell to the Austrians, like at the end of the 18th century. This is an era, first of all, where there was an extremely high number of illegitimate children. It was like a time when it was unfashionable to be seen out in the world in society with your spouse. So that was a thing that you did only with a lover. So, of course, you can imagine there are a lot of orphan children. And to keep them off the streets, to keep them giving back something to the city, they taught them this skill. For whatever reason, these girls became extremely talented. They began to attract the most esteemed composers and maestros of the era. This is where Vivaldi got his start, teaching these young girls. And people came from all over the world to hear these orphans sing. It became like something that the rich people in England would do when they came of age. They would go to Rome to see the Vatican, they'd go to Florence to see the David, and they'd go to Venice to see these orphan girls sing. It became one of the original music conservatories, and so there was this real, like, concentrated force of musical talent and musical power there, but for the girls who lived there, it was also a very restricted life. When you were accepted into the choir at one of these hospitals, you became, you basically signed your life away. You signed an oath that said you would never, ever sing outside of the church. And when I discovered that at the very beginning of my research for this book, I was thinking about, of course, the girl for whom that would feel impossible, and that would feel really stifling, even though she has immense talent and becomes one of the stars of this choir, all she dreams about is getting out.
And so you have the backdrop for the story. You have the city, you have the location, the Hospital for the Incurables. How do you decide where to take the story from there? Because it seems like the world could be your canvas for that at that point.
Yeah, this was an interesting experience for me because it was such a foreign world to me that I had to return to Venice. After I'd gotten the idea, I was in Venice on a book tour, and I kind of got lost and found myself before this formidable building called the Hospital of the Incurables. I knew I wanted to find out more about the place, and I wanted to. I knew there was a story there. I didn't know what it was. I came back to Venice and spent about 10 days meeting with Venetian historians and the keepers of these, you know, what each of the hospitals is now. The hospital I wrote about is now a fine arts college, but I got to go inside and spend some time there and kind of feel its history just in the stones. But over the course of that week, meeting with these historians, going each night to the churches where these girls sing, and they still perform all the old Baroque music there. I went to see a different concert almost every night I was there. It felt like 10 days of that kind of research was kind of the equivalent to me of spending 6 months at a library, which is what I normally do when I prepare to write a book. And by the time I left that city, I felt like the story had presented itself to me. I knew at least who the characters were and how their love story would begin. And it was enough for me to come home and begin writing. Of course, they surprised me and they, you know, had other plans in mind than I had for them. But there was something so concentrated about this research project that it sent me into a place where I was ready to let them tell the rest of the story to me.
As I read the book and I got these images of Venice in this era, I thought back to the movie Amadeus, and a lot of that took place in Vienna, Austria. But the city of masks, as Venice was described during then, it reminded me of the masquerade scene from Amadeus. What was the whole idea about the city of masks at Vienna, and were the two cities fairly similar at that time?
I think there was a lot of overlap, certainly in music, and there was a lot of, if you studied in Venice, you would perform in Vienna and vice versa, and there certainly the maestros of the Incurables, they often had an Austrian or Viennese maestro. The masks is so interesting to me because, of course, everybody, when you think of Venice, you think of masks and you think of these parties that people went to. What I didn't know was that in this era, I mean, for most of the 18th century, Venice is so decadent, and it's a time when they're really waning in their actual power in the world. They're no longer the center of everything, and they're no longer the trading hub of the world, but they're not acting as if they are. They're still throwing the most extravagant parties. Carnival lasted about 6 months of the year, but even when it wasn't carnival season, there were other festivals that people wore masks to. People began to wear masks in this century everywhere, like not just to go to a party, but to go to the market, to go to work, to go visit a friend. So you can imagine what that would do to our senses of identity. I mean, everything was anonymous, and that led me to thinking about these two characters who lose each other. They have an argument. They both leave the Incurables. This is Violetta is the girl, Mino is the boy, and they love each other, but an argument sort of breaks them up momentarily, and can they ever find each other again? Everybody in the city is always wearing masks, and these two characters in particular are in hiding because they've run away from the Incurables, and they are kind of on the lam, and that's compounded by the fact that their lives have to be completely anonymous behind these masks.
I'm chatting with Lauren Kate about her brand new novel, The Orphan Song. What was the purpose of the masks?
Well, I think it was initially to celebrate, to escape from, Venice had these very rigid laws that people had to follow in terms of decor. So there were, for example, a married woman, a newly married woman, could wear one strand of pearls for the first year of her marriage, and after that she could wear no jewelry whatsoever. I think this is because the amount of wealth that the Venetian society had in this era was so vast that they had to have these restrictive laws to kind of keep themselves in check. And so I think the masks in some way became so popular because it was a way to skirt some of these laws. You could maybe wear something that was against the rules, but no one would know it was you if you were behind a mask. There are a lot of interesting anecdotes. Some of my favorites are stories about a husband and a wife who would be out at a casino, and they would begin to flirt with one another and realize only at the end of the night when one of them lifted the mask to try to get a kiss that, oh my goodness, this is my spouse. I'm not supposed to be seen in society with my spouse.
Did a lot of these rules of the time, did they have a civil history to them, or was this a religious history that brought these about?
Venice, I mean, of course it's a Catholic country, but of all of the, I mean, they were quite far away from the Vatican. They were not, the Vatican had a lot of issues with the Venetian, with the Doge and the Venetian government because they didn't follow the rules the way most of the other Italian principalities did. So much of this is civic, and it's for the good of the Republic. I mean, some of these laws also sound as if they are in line with religious dictums of the day, but no, it's a secular thing. And similarly with the orphanages, even though these girls are trained to sing only sacred music and they're only singing in churches, there's still, the money went directly to, it didn't go to the Pope, it didn't go to Rome, it went directly to, you know, the Venetian government.
As you visit Venice today or in this era, does it look the same as you do your research and see what it looked like in the 1700s? Because I think of American cities, and you know, if you visited New York today, you probably wouldn't recognize New York from the 1800s, let alone today.
Yeah, I do think that Venice really wears its history on its sleeve. And, of course, you can go and stand in the middle of San Marco Square and be swamped by a million other tourists like yourself and kind of feel like that's the impression you're getting of Venice. But I think if you wander away and find a back alley and let it lead you somewhere, you can really travel back in time. And there are so many amazing ways to touch this history and that are not just like going to an art museum. I think I really got a huge thrill out of stepping into some of these old churches and hearing the music of this era performed by different concertos from different small groups. That was one of the things that really took me back to the time. I think, you know, of course, the buildings and the stones and the water there hasn't changed in 1,000 years, a lot of them. So it is a great place that with just a small amount of effort, you can kind of get a time machine and travel back.
And I know, I think you teach at UC Davis, right?
I went to UC Davis to get my master's degree. Now I'm teaching creative writing through Stanford.
Okay, but you live in Southern California. As you sit and write a book like this in Southern California, is that having a magical way of drawing out the busyness of life there to take you back to the 18th century in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, writing a book is always a sort of transporting event, some days more so than others, but I try to stay, especially when I'm writing a first draft, I try to stay as close as possible to the era or the topic that I am writing about, you know, as much of the time as I can. So all of the books that I'm consuming, all of the, you know, I'm also watching Mozart, Amadeus. I'm trying to keep myself steeped in the world of the book because it is hard to leave your everyday life and traffic and taking your kids to school and that kind of thing. But for me, it's important to put as much of my real life into the story as I can, at least while I'm doing the first draft.
All right. The book is The Orphan Song. It is by Lauren Kate. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Putnam. And if you want a good way to take a very cheap trip to Vienna this summer, at least in the 18th century, pick up this book and check it out. It's like a great vacation back to a different era and time. Lauren, fantastic book. Thanks for joining us today to talk about it.
Thanks so much, Brian.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.